Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Welcome to episode 33 of Black Hole Cinema. I am your host this evening, Emma Platt, and joining me tonight, I know they said this evening again, it's Chris.
Hello, well it is technically evening, I mean night is evening, isn't it?
I know, I just said it too many times and it sounded
weird. Oh yeah, it's like, allow myself to introduce myself.
Pretty much, yeah. So, as usual, we're going to do our movie news and we might sing the movie news song again, which... There was a movie news song? Yeah, you were on last time with me and Chris Haig, and we were all just going, movie news.
Oh, yeah, I was going to say, is it what I...
That's the song, apparently. Well, it is now.
You know what? I was thinking about making one up, and that's exactly what it sounded like.
That's officially the movie news song. After our movie news, tonight we will be reviewing Ant-Man, Marvel's latest offering, starring Paul Rudd. And then it's the UK box office, which I always fuck up. And then, Chris, you have seen The Gallows?
Yeah, and I've seen Selfless as well, so...
Oh, awesome. See, we know how to do our jobs. And then, it'll be time for Dead Meat again, and this week we are talking... Dead Meat! I'm going to have to do a Dead Meat song, aren't I, as well?
Dead Meat! There you are.
That's too jolly. Every time I think of theme music, I just think of the X-Files song in my head. But I'll have to, yeah, we'll just go Dead Meat Man all over it. And then that'll be it. This is going well so far, as always. Right, movie news. So, Comic-Con wrapped up last Sunday, and I know it's been talked about and everything, but we got an official release of the Suicide Squad trailer. For those of you who don't know, Jared Leto will be playing the new Joker, and we've got like Will Smith in it and Margot Robbie's Harley Quinn, and it's kind of like an anti-Avengers. Suicide Squad are going to come save the world. So the trailer was released and it's all dark and brooding because that's kind of what DC want to go for. They want to set themselves apart from Marvel. But I have to say, it looks really cool. And I am a huge Harley Quinn fan, so I was really interested to see how Margot Robbie's going to play her. And she just seems a mental bitch, which I'm perfectly happy
She's
with.
She's pretty much perfect casting, I think.
Yeah, she is.
I mean, I love Margot Robbie anyway. I've only seen her in two films. I know already she has my heart. So, but she has the right look. She has the kind of like, yeah, I can be, I'm blonde. I can be like an old psychotic sort of, yeah, Mr. J, how you doing? So I totally see her as... Harley Quinn. You know, again, it's what it does. I do like David, yeah. I think I like Fury. I like Dern. Even Sabotage, which wasn't very good, I know, but I still kind of enjoyed. I do kind of like his side film, so I think it could be fun. I still have reservations about Joker, though. I'm still not sold on it. I know a lot of people are now going, oh, yes, bring it, but to me, it looks exactly like how it was when they first had that released that first picture, and I thought it just looks like Marilyn Manson playing, doing cosplay. That's exactly what it looks like to me.
I think think they kind of want to capitalise, though, on the fact that Jared Leto's, you know, he's in that band, isn't he? Second to Mars. I think they want to do... I think it's good that every kind of film or TV show that Joker's been in, it's kind of almost been like a different version of Joker. Mm. You know what I mean? Like, he's like, this is like the rock star Joker, and you could say Mark Hamill's voice is like the true Joker, and then Heath Ledger's is like the hobo Joker. Do you know what I mean? So it's good that they're almost creating a different type of Joker each time. It'd be interesting to see how it works and how it ties into Batman versus Superman, because I noticed when I watched the two trailers, it seemed that there was a very... I mean, I know you can see Batman allegedly in this trailer, whether it's really Batman or not. I mean, I know they saw that the Batmobile was on set, wasn't it? There was people on the Batmobile on set and things like that. But it seemed to really tie, especially at the end when the Joker's saying, I don't want to kill you, I just really want to hurt you. If you watch the Superman vs. Batman trailer, you can see Joker has written on one of Batman's suits.
No, that's actually Robin's suit.
Yeah, exactly. I was going to say that. Someone said that it's actually Robin's suit, and the implication is that Joker has killed Robin. So it would be really... If you could see it, like, maybe Joker's talking to Batman. Like, why would I kill you?
We do know that she was in Donnie Darko, and I forget her name. Is it Jenna Malone or something like that? Who's in Donnie Darko and
Sucker Punch.
Yeah, she's been cast as Robin. But that is like one of the, you know, that's the Robin in The Dark Knight Returns, which is the thing that's basically has like Superman and Batman fight, you know. So that's one of the biggest influences. So, you know, and there are many Robins. So I would say that this is kind of like one of the, like, Joker is obviously he's killed a Robin, which he has done. There's various different Robins, and this is like a newer age Robin, which is like a female. I think that's where they're going with it. So I think that's going to be one, like, another little thing where they, like, reference that, the fact that, oh, well, you know, he's coming back and he has to get a new recruit, and it turns out to be a chick this time. So I think that's one of the things. I mean, watching the Batman vs. Superman trailer, I was like, oh, yeah, well, now I'm actually really sold on this. I really want to... Still, those things that, I mean, I'm still concerned about how... I think I'm too concerned that they're going to try and do too much, but there was enough in it to make so, oh, that was good, oh, that's intriguing. Like, one instantly, I think what kind of, like, it did really well, and I'm not sure if it was like a, they've always planned this, or they've just listened to, like, the reaction that Man of Steel got, but they actually made, like, the destruction of Metropolis actually be, like, the actual tipping point for Batman to, like, get right now. Yeah. You know, which kind of made sense, and it kind of, like, it kind of solves that issue now. It kind of, like, go, but there's no repercussion. Oh, there is now.
Yeah,
oh, okay.
Yeah. That's going to be really interesting to see. So, I'm looking forward to Suicide Squad. I'm not a huge DC fan. I mean, I've got some Batman comics and things like that, but I think overall, especially in the films, I enjoyed Batman Begins, and I really liked Dark Knight. I wasn't too impressed with Dark Knight Rises. And Man of Steel was okay. So DC films really haven't grabbed me the way Marvel has, so it will be interesting to see. Speaking of superheroes, still, the final Fantastic Four trailer was released this week as well, and I think I'm possibly the only person who's really looking forward to this. I really enjoyed the first two Fantastic Four films, and I know they're loads of shite. And I'm not even going to say they're my guilty pleasure, because I don't feel guilty for liking the things.
No, you shouldn't do.
I mean, they're not good. I mean, the CGI was pants at the time. Jessica Alba as Sue Storm. I mean...
Yeah, that's all you need to say, really.
Yeah, Chris Evans, I thought he was good. And is it Michael Chiklis?
Yeah, the guy.
Like, his I thought his suit was... It doesn't look too bad. I mean, he's supposed to be a big rock one, so what can you do? But, I mean, the cast in this one seems really good. And I like the fact it's like... People are going to complain. Oh, they didn't go into space, they went to another dimension. But nerds always complain. It's what we do, you know?
Yeah.
It's just, we can't help it. But I'm really looking forward to it, because I really enjoyed it, especially... I thought Rise of Silver Surfer was boss. I really think that's a really good film. But it's going to be really interesting. And, like, the cast are a lot younger, so I assume it's got to do more with the Ultimate Universe. And just, I think it's going to be good.
It does seem to be going on the right, we're going to take this in a really serious direction. I'm not sure if I've seen the latest trailer. I mean, I've seen two trailers... So I'm not entirely sure if I've seen the actual one that you're talking about, but the general, you know, I'm kind of a little bit thinking that this will probably be, again, like the dark horse of the summer releases. Like this, I mean, out of all the films, I mean, like Terminator Genisys was, or Genesis or whatever it's pronounced. A lot of people say, well, we're pretty much like panning that from the start before they've seen it. So, but this is kind of having a similar reaction. But I think the way the trailer is cut, it does seem pretty humorless. But to be honest with you, it doesn't seem to give too much away, and I'm kind of thinking that this will, out of all the films this summer, this will be the one who's most likely to surprise everyone. So people will go in expecting it to be a bit pants, but actually that wasn't quite good. That was actually quite good. I quite like that. So that's my money's betting on the fact that Fantastic Four will be a lot better than what people are expecting it to be.
And I think that's all from me about my movie news this week.
Oh, so basically, what else is there? I mean,
no one, like, it's after Comic-Con, and...
So what's next, are we doing box office?
Ant-Man, we are doing...
Should we save Ant-Man to last, because...
Yeah, sure, do you want to do The Gallows?
All right.
Here we go.
Can I get some stealth, please?
Yeah, this place is super creepy tonight.
All right, here's the stage. Let's do what we came here for.
For you, sir.
Who the hell would be in here right now?
Hello?
So, Gallows is another found footage horror film. Ooh, yeah, I know.
is that like a hint to how you
feel about it? Well, it's got absolute pound, but again, I think I may be coming, I don't know, should we say easily pleased, because I didn't find it that bad. But yeah, it's just like found footage again, really. I mean, that's one way we pick up things. Like, okay, I get the whole reason it's found footage is a thing, but I just find, just shoot, make it normally. Who gives a shit it's found footage or not? I just don't understand, you know, because it just limits you. It's like, oh, we have to be all set on phones now, you know. It's like, oh, we have to be clever. It's like, yeah, but it's not clever. Blair Witch did it like 10, 15 years ago. Who gives a shit now? Sorry, but it just doesn't make any sense to me. It's like you just give yourself an obstacle to go around. Why can't you just, you know, if you really want that you know, iPhone video camera aesthetic, just shoot like that anyway and just make that the aesthetic rather than be like a whole setup thing, like, oh well, it's footage that we found that is actually quite nicely edited, whatever. So yeah, basically it's a found footage horror film set at high school, based around a play that was back in 1993. It starts off seeing a video camera footage of a play set in 1993 where a character has to set up to be hung, and he is actually hung like an accidental death on stage. And then it cuts to now, where the play called The Gallows is actually going back and redoing it, and we get introduced to certain characters, pretty much jock type characters, where one jock is kind of fancies like the lead girl, so he's gone in for the lead role, and he's meant to be pretty bad in the role, but his mates keep sort of basically just pissing around and being fucking obnoxious twats for the whole thing. It kind of reminded me a bit of Project X, which I fucking despised, because it's just like, these characters are, you know, like, the main character who's got the camera, who's doing all the filming, is pretty much one of the worst human beings you could ever meet in your life. But I go with it, because this is a horror film, so he's probably going to meet a gruesome death. So you go, okay, it's fine. Unlike Project X, where he just goes like, hey, it's great, and they get away with it. And you think, fuck you. So basically, he comes up with the idea. It's like, actually, no, why don't we break in and destroy the set? Because, you know, that's a nice thing to do. So they do that, and they get locked in, and then they seem to get hunted by a guy, basically a hangman with a noose, who seems to be out to kill them. And it's pretty dumb. It has its dumb. It kind of wants to have a cake and eat it. I mean, part of it's filmed on like actual iPhones. Some of it's filmed on an actual camcorder, so it kind of cuts between that sort of footage. And it kind of wants to like sort of build up suspense. But basically, there's one moment where a character gets separated. and it stays with the other people trying to get the other person back, and then after that's resolved, it kind of cuts to what the other person was seeing, and it just kind of feels like you kind of want to have your cake and eat it. I feel like it should have just chosen which side to go on, and it just feels pretty much too much like they just couldn't decide what to. He couldn't decide between the two. He kind of thought, okay, I like the idea of doing that, but also I also want the viewers to see this, you know. So on that level, I felt like, well, okay, it doesn't really hold weight, but you know, I enjoyed it. It had enough tense moments, had a couple of jump scares in it, but it has pretty much, its last scene is pretty much pointless and is so fucking dumb and silly. It almost ruins it. But you know what? If you see it on Netflix one night, you know, it's like 80 minutes long. You know, if it was any longer, it'll probably feel too long. But you know, give it a go. It's fine. I enjoyed it, even though the ending is fucking pants. But
do you think that like fan footage has had its day?
I just think some film like Chronicle, which I actually quite like that. That was probably the last. That and Enderwatch, I think, are the two kind of found footage films that I generally thought they're fucking great. Chronicle just about gets away with it because it kind of like plays its whole idea of like, well, all its camera angles are played on like a camera from somewhere, as, you know, whether it's someone filming or a surveillance camera or it kind of just about got away with it, and the story kind of pulled it through. And Enderwatch, I just felt. I really liked Enderwatch, but the whole thing with Jake Gyllenhaal setting up, like, oh, I'm going to film everything, just feels like, what's the point in that shit? Just film it, like, as it is, as the film does. Just don't make up excuses of, like, why the camera has to be there. It's like, it's a film, we know where the camera has to be there to shoot things. You know, so just have it as a normal film, because at the end of the day, just building up other things, but even though I really liked Enderwatch anyway. So, but that's what I think found footage tends to do these days. It's just building up an obstacle course and a reason for a camera to be there, and it always ends up cheating as well. You always end up like cutting away to some other part, thinking, well, who's filming that? Why is the camera working in that condition? Why, you know, I've not seen half of them now. I mean, apparently like there's a ton of them that just cheat, and I just think, what's the point? Just if you want that aesthetic, just be a normal film, but just shoot it with an iPhone or shoot it with a camcorder if you want that kind of natural on the scene aesthetic to it, rather than the glossiness of it. And that's another thing about the colors as well, you know, for something that's like shot on camera phones and camcorders, it does look very glossy as well. So, you know, again, it wasn't cake and eat it, I guess, but there you are.
I think when they try and like force a reason why they're recording it, me and my brother watched a Bigfoot one.
Was that a recent one? Has that been on Netflix or something? Or?
It was on Sky Movies. It was on like Sky On Demand. I can't for the life of me remember what it was called. And it was a guy going to make a documentary about Bigfoot with his girlfriend. So you can kind of understand why they had the camera. But then they're recording all the personal conversations. And I was like, well, if you're making a documentary about Bigfoot, why would you record that? I think its place is definitely really in the kind of horror genre. I don't think you could make much of an action film through fan footage, because then you're going to waste all your money on these effects that you're not going to see properly because it's supposed to be shot through like a camera phone and stuff like that. But I think it's got a bit more life left in it personally, but I think over the next 2 or 3 years it'll start maybe peeing around a little bit.
I don't know, but it's lasted quite a bit though, isn't it?
It really has, considering like Blair Witch was like 1999 now, so you're talking 15 years.
You've built an empire from the ground up.
Mr. Hale, it's an honor. The man who built New York.
People will insist that your buildings make you immortal. Now, as you slip away, do you feel immortal?
We offer humanity's greatest minds more time to fulfill their potential.
Designed to offer you the very best of the human experience.
It's alive.
An empty vessel.
If we do this, there's no turning back. Your old life is over.
Yeah, which, again, was another film that got panned. I kind of enjoyed it. yeah, basically, Ryan Reynolds play... Well, no, actually, no. Let's start off right away. Ben Kingsley. he plays a big wealthy businessman who is dying. He's got a strange daughter who wants nothing to do with him, and he basically strikes a deal with Matthew Good, who gives him, well, basically, I can give you a new body essentially, and you can have a new life. And he goes, okay, fine. And that new body is Ryan Reynolds. And things turn out, he's actually, you know, quite enjoying it, gets used to it, starts having vivid dreams of, like, he's not quite sure about what's going on, whether it's sort of old memories or just random dreams popping in. But it turns out that the body isn't actually cloned like he thought it was. It is, in fact, someone else who's had a previous life, and he goes on to find answers. And then the film actually, to my surprise, turned into an action film, which I thought it was going to be. I thought it was going to be like one of these like kind of sci-fi kind of drama type things, like Limitless or something like that. But it actually turns out to be kind of, well, what if we did Limitless, but then decides, oh no, we're going to do like a few action scenes thrown in. And, you know, me being a bit of an action nerd, I kind of liked that. I was like, yes, sign me up for that. And I kind of enjoyed it. It could have been shorter, I think. There were a few issues, but, you know, Ryan Reynolds kicking ass and, you know, playing with a few interesting ideas, and Matthew Good being a little bit creepy and a bit nerdy, you know. I was absolutely fine. You know, I like the ideas. The main henchman, keeps coming back, but in different bodies, because he keeps getting like pretty much like mortally wounded. Then they obviously just put him into a new body. It's like I kind of like that idea. So there was something to enjoy. Again, I think it's a good freestyle film for me. But then others hated it. So what do I know? I like Terminator Genesis. So there you are.
I like Terminator Genesis.
I know. Well, you know, we're right, but obviously. But...
Well, that's why we're on a podcast and the other people are. Oh, every week I think I'm going to say something stupid and get a load of shit on Twitter, and I never do. I'm obviously not being offensive enough.
we can try. We can...
God, no. So this is just out. So two... okay if they're on Netflix kind of films.
Basically, I do have to acknowledge that I've read a lot of people have not liked certain things, but I do think both films have something to enjoy in them, you know. So Gallows has, I thought, had some quite tense moments and some genuine shot, even though it has issues, but it's 80 minutes, so who gives a fuck, you know. And I mean at an age where most things are like two hours or over that, you know, it's 90, I always appreciate when a film is 90 minutes or, you know, 80 minutes, so, you know, it knows when to get the fuck out. But, you know, it does have some dumb moments, you know. Limitless could have been fleshed out a lot more, but I
did you say Limitless?
Selfless. Sorry, because I used Limitless as a reference point, so
yeah, you did.
So that's kind of like, I thought it was going to be like that, but it turned out to be actually an action film, which kind of pleasantly surprised me. But I did kind of like that. It was directed by the guy who did The Cell, Selfless.
God, that's a film I haven't talked about.
Yeah, he did Mirror Mirror as well, and the film that wasn't quite as good as Snow White and the Huntsman. And and we all know how good that film was. So,
so two solid recommendations.
Yeah, kind of like sort of two, like, yeah, why not? Kind of.
Yeah, being generous this week.
Yeah.
Right, box office. This week, number 10, Song of the Sea, which looks just so beautiful. I've saw the trailer for it a couple of times, and it just looks so whimsical and calming and soothing, and I might actually go see this. It took 72,000 on its first week, and I thought it was like Studio Ghibli, because it's kind of got a very similar vibe, but it just looks beautiful. It really does. So if you don't want to take your kids to see Minions,
right,
check Song of the Sea. Fucking Minions. Number nine, I just can't. They're fucking everywhere, and my son has got like so much minion stuff, and it's driving me insane. Goddamn kids. Number 9 is Love and Mercy, which took 105,000 in its first week also, which I've heard absolutely nothing about, so.
Yeah, I've heard good things. I mean, I've not seen it myself, but I think I've known like a few people who've seen it and said that it's been really good, so. Yeah, I think I missed my chance to see it in cinema, but I will definitely check it out at some point.
Number 8 is Spy, which has taken almost 10 million to date, and I actually caught up with this earlier on in the week and really enjoyed it. Tad too long, I thought.
Definitely.
But
like 2 hours should not be. It's not. It's yeah. 90 minutes should have half an hour taken out.
I thought Jason Statham was my favourite thing. Of course, in this film.
Jason's favourite part in any film, quite frankly.
Just when he's talking about, you know, my girlfriend died because she fell out of a plane and got hit by another plane, and I readjusted my arm with my other arm, and I was in a car on fire, and I was like, I love you.
I'm on a fucking lake.
Until Melissa McCarthy just started mouthing off at Rose Byrne, I didn't enjoy it as much. Like, when she turned into kind of, like, her bridesmaid character.
Where basically she's like, oh, I'm so confident and all this stuff.
But I really enjoyed it, so I'm glad to see that's done quite well. Number 7 is Empire Strikes Back, which was...
Again, seriously?
Uh-huh. 2 million so far, 6 weeks on release. So it's looking good for the new Star Wars film in December anyway. And Empire, everyone says Empire is like the best one. And then at number 6 is Amy, the Amy Winehouse documentary, which is taking just over 1 million. A lot of people I know on Facebook have seen this and said it's quite heartbreaking and it's very emotional. However, Amy Winehouse's dad is apparently portrayed in a really bad light, so he's got a huge problem with it. But that's always the best documentaries. When someone gets pissed off after it's come out, you know it's probably really good. I might actually see if I can catch it.
Probably because they portrayed it as the truth. It's like, I mean, the thing is, he's probably got pissed off because he's like been betrayed as a parent who basically just like exploited her daughter for money, basically, or just like pushed her daughter further in the limelight so she can make more money. I'm pissed off. Like, well, yeah, but it kind of happened though, didn't it? So
yeah, I've heard basically a lot of people say that that's exactly how he's portrayed, as a man who ignored his daughter's needs to basically get what he wanted. But, you know, apparently he said you're only getting one half of the story, and they're going to make a new documentary and blah blah blah. So number 5, Magic Mike XXL, which has taken nearly 4 million, which I'm not surprised at. What really surprised me about the first one is I went to see it, and I didn't go see it to see Channing Tatum take his clothes off, because I don't like Channing Tatum. I thought, ooh, I'll go see this because, you know, the director, he's got such prestige, and the screen was full of 30 to 40 year old women shouting at the screen,
throwing money,
the kits off all the way through. Pretty much, it was like a hen party in there till they stopped taking the clothes off, and everyone was like, oh, it's good.
Ugh, cowardness.
How dare you? So, I haven't seen this yet, so I don't know what it's like.
I mean, it's more dancey. It's more, I mean, like, I was quite surprised. I was thinking, like, it was going to be, like, like the film that people were expecting the first one to be, which is basically just like more like pretty much be all just guys taking the shirts off and abs and kind of like, it's like, yeah, but where's any character development? But there is actually more. That, I mean, it's more, it does involve like the other guys a lot more. So there is some story, even though it doesn't really have a story, but it feels like it's just like a character piece about these guys just getting together, doing the thing. And it has, like, I say, it does have like a really sort of a positive look at like the male strippers, of like they're actually there for good intentions. They, you know, they're like appreciate women and like there to kind of like to essentially sort of give them a good time, you know, and in the same all honest fun and have fun themselves and just, you know, appreciate women in kind of some sort of way. So it does have good qualities in it, and I actually was quite surprised. I enjoyed it quite a lot. Even like the dance stuff as well. I thought, fuck me, that's impressive. I mean, there was a bit literally where like Channing Tatum just flips over a chair with a girl in it, literally just flips over, and then at one point he's there like literally upside down, like pretty much doing like on top, like literally sort of hands on the chair, like lifting himself upside down, like sort of pretty much doing like push-ups. It's just like, man.
Did you want to stand up, just giving like a slow clap, just like bravo?
I just sat there thinking that, you know, there's few like immortals that walk the earth, and there's one of them is The Rock, obviously. Yeah, obviously. But it's like Channing. I mean, you know, he's got it all in him, really. He's just handsome. He's got his body to die for, and top off, he comes across as such a nice, genuine guy. The bastard. So
I was about to say that.
He's like, oh God. Yeah. So
God damn you, Channing Tatum. How
yeah.
Are you? Number four is my and Chris's favourite, Terminator Genesis. Taking over 7 million. It's not that
it
bad.
It is. I mean, I did a podcast for it this week, which I have yet to post, and I'm surprise, I was the only one saying, yeah, but come on, it was fun, though. A lot of people's are like, the arguments are valid. It is, yeah, yes, it's fucking stupid, it makes no fucking sense, yes. Yes, you could say that Jai Courtney is miscast. Yes, yeah, all these things. But end of the day, I had fun. It was pacey. I had good action scenes. Yeah, you know, it did some cool shit. I don't know. Well, yeah, whatever.
Yeah, I agree with it. Do you know who Jai Courtney reminds me of? Ron Perlman.
Really?
I imagine. Not in the way he acts. In his face, I think he's.
What, you think he's going to have some massive accident or something?
No,
okay.
I was looking at him thinking, you remind me of someone, but that's who reminds me of. No, I agree, it definitely has some interesting ideas and things like that, and I thought it was going to be really awful, and I did not want to see it, and I was really pleasantly surprised. Yeah. So, we give it the thumbs up.
I certainly give it a thumbs up, definitely.
Number three, Jurassic World, taking over 57 million. Once again, I really enjoyed it. Some people really fucking hated it. Whatever. Action, it's got dinosaurs.
It's about dinosaurs, Chris Pratt, there you are.
If you are easily pleased like me, go see it. Very good. Really enjoyed it. Ted 2, over 3.5 million in its first week. I haven't seen it. Not really.
You're not a Family Guy, Seth MacFarlane fan, no?
Do you know what? Family Guy and American Dad are those shows that I will, if I don't know what to watch on Netflix, or I'm reading a book or something like that, I'll stick it on in the background and I can just watch it on a loop. And the first Ted film was okay. But I'm just not really, and I quite like Marky Mark. And I'm gonna.
I do, honestly. I just like, yeah, it's Marky.
Yeah. So, but I don't know. There's just something about. I probably will see it, but I won't see it in the pictures. I'll probably see it when it comes out in DVD.
Again, I think the problem is, and it's the same thing with Ted 2. I mean, with the first Ted 2. I mean, Ted 2 is a bit more. It feels very much like a Family Guy episode more than like Ted was, or what the. In the West kind of thing they did.
Oh,
yeah, that's the one. It does feel a lot more Family Guy, but again, it's the same problem with that was with the first Ted and plus the Million Days Die in the West. It's like Seth MacFarlane does not know how to write a film script. He knows how to make jokes, and yes, they are offensive, and yes, they are depending on your taste, but he does not, you know, it's like they just go on and there's no real actual story structure, and that's his main problem. If he made a solid story structure that was about 90 minutes, it would work a heck of a lot better. Ted would have worked a heck of a lot better if it had that. If it was 90 minutes and had a solid narrative to follow, you can still have all these like random little jokes in that make the film funny. But it needs to be. You need to keep it 90 minutes. You need to be on point. And yeah, with comedy, you have to work a lot harder and just. Seems like when he tries us a film, he just kind of like goes, ah, yeah, well, I'll just throw in random jokes and yeah, we'll do that then, and it just doesn't hold together as a film. But it has enough jokes to make it worth your while. So if you like Family Guy, where?
Number one, no surprise, is Minions, 27 million. I assume this is gonna be number one next week as well. I don't think Ant Man will
really?
Be number one.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra.
Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
I think all the kids are off and...
Yeah, but things are Marvel to like sell. That. And it's, you know... It does,
but... I don't know, I've just got a feeling that maybe Minions will hold on for another week, you know, and... my son keeps asking to go see it again, and I keep lying and saying it's not on the pictures anymore.
Oh, you got Inside Out as well coming out.
Yes, we are going to see that on Friday. I have promised we can go see that. But
not Minions.
Yeah, not Minions, but no surprise that it's still number one. Anyway, wrapping that up, let's talk some Marvel films.
Marvel.
Ant-Man.
Marvel.
Marvel.
Imagine a soldier size of an insect. The ultimate secret weapon.
If you give godlike powers to everyone, it's going to be chaos.
So how do we stop him?
By knowing I. Scott, I've been watching you for a while. You're different. And I believe everyone deserves a shot at redemption. Do you?
Absolutely. My days of breaking into places and stealing stuff are over. What do you want me to do?
I want you to break into a place and steal some stuff.
Makes sense.
Ant-Man, I've been asked to say this. What is this? A film for ants? There you go, Abbo. I hope you're happy now. Okay?
Boom, boom.
My boyfriend, he asked me to say, and Abbo did say that when the film started, so...
I guess the filmers can be a ruddy good time. Get it?
Clever.
I'm just thinking of random puns for this film.
I admittedly didn't see the first 3 minutes of this film because some asshole was so aggressive to me yesterday in the screen. I actually walked out and cried. So I didn't see the first 3 minutes. So I can't. If the first 3 minutes were amazing, the best of the film, I couldn't tell you about them. Ant-Man is Paul Rudd, Scott Lang. He's an ex-con who is, you know, he's down on his luck. He can't get a job. He can't see his daughter. His wife's remarrying this asshole cop. So his friends, who were hilarious in this film, tasked to say, "Oh, we've got a tip. We want you to sneak in and steal something and blow up the safe." And it's actually all set up from Michael Douglas, who is the original Ant-Man, and he's looking for a new Ant-Man because he wants to steal something off Darren Cross, who is Corey Stoll, who some of you may know from The Strain or from Law and Order.
From where? House of Cards as well.
I don't watch House of
Cards. He's in the first season.
So yeah, they want to steal something off him so he can't get all the power and create all these soldiers and blah 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 blah. Edgar Wright was originally supposed to direct this, and I was so excited because I love Edgar Wright, and I was so excited when they cast Paul Rudd, and unfortunately for whatever reason he left, and it was directed by Peyton Reed. I would say, if I was going to mark this on a scale compared to all the other Marvel films, I would put this somewhere in the region of Thor.
Okay, it depends on, well, where do you feel about Thor though, are you...
Thor, I would say Thor, if I'm going to rate it 1 to 10, Thor's like a 6.5 to
10. Okay.
So it's,
yeah, so I mean, it's, I do like, I have a major soft spot for Thor, but I can certainly see where you're going. It is, I wouldn't say it's up there with the best, but then again, that's not to say there's... it does anything wrong. It's just an enjoyable film that kind of like is, again, it's playful. It kind of has fun with itself. It's the one that feels more like a comedy as well.
Yeah, it's a heist movie.
Yeah.
And, you know, if Winter Soldier's the spy one, the espionage one, this is a heist movie. I felt like they were building up for a really long time to him actually going in and committing the heist. And then, I don't know, I felt like the first bit before the heist, they could have edited that down a little bit, maybe. I thought the supporting cast were great. I love Evangeline Lilly. Michael Douglas is really good. Corey Stoll was... I think he walked a very fine line between being absolutely off his rocker crazy.
He did play. I mean, I do like Corey Stoll, but I was going into it. I was thinking, is he the right guy to be a bit like the big bad? I mean, he comes across more as a character actor rather than someone who can like hold it as the main lead as the main villain. You know, but he does a good job as being a bit of a cunt.
Yeah.
Well, I say a bit of it. He does pretty much just vaporize someone on the willy-nilly, but yeah, he is a pretty nasty piece of work in this film, really, and he does a good job of it, so kudos.
Yeah. I liked, in the comics, Hank Pym is a bit of an asshole and an alcoholic, and he's really a bit of a shithead to Wasp, Janet Van Dyne, who's obviously not in this film because she's just not in this film, let's just say that. I thought, you know, when Michael Douglas was like losing his temper with Evangeline Lilly and shouting at her, I thought that kind of, to me, showed shades of like the Hank Pym in the comics, like a bit of a hothead, a bit of a temper. And then you could also link it to the fact that he said to Paul Rudd, the suit takes its toll. So is his mind a little bit gone because of the suit and things like that? It was quite interesting. I thought the bit where when he like the Thomas the Tank bit.
Yeah.
That really made me laugh. And it was really good to see, like, what would you do with this power? Do you know? I mean, I think the first bit where he shrunk in the bathtub and he fell through into the club, I wasn't too impressed. Like, that didn't really hold my attention. And considering it was the first time he used his powers, I was a bit like, okay then. But later on, it was really interesting to see how they utilize the, you know, when he blows up the glass when he's stuck inside the yellow jacket thing because he's got the little things. And then he's trying to hit Yellow Jacket and hits. So there was interesting points where I thought, like, okay, so you've shown me a little bit what you could do with your powers. But that first little bit where he turns the suit on, I wasn't too impressed. I don't know why. I can't really put my finger on why that bit didn't just grab me so much.
Didn't it just feel like underwhelming? Like, it wasn't like, oh, like you thought, oh, this is rubbish. It just felt like a bit, yeah, I'm just a bit underwhelmed.
Yeah, it was like, this is okay, you know. But I think like the whole film kind of felt like that. It's not a bad film by any means. No one is bad in it. It's not, like you said, it's like a comedy. But I think the comedy wasn't as, I don't know, it's not as overt as in, say, like, you know, in Avengers, where like when the Hulk punches Thor and stuff like that.
Yeah.
The really funny bit was with his friends, when he's like, you know, talking about, okay, so my cousin Ignacio is talking to me and I'm at this wine tasting, you know how I'm not into red wine, I'm more into rosé. Like, and like, smiles and moving.
Wait, give me that.
Yeah. I like that bit. That bit made me smile. And, you know, it's a theme of redemption. You know, he's a bad guy, but he's not a bad guy because he's a bad guy with good intentions and he tries to do the right thing and all that kind of stuff. So, I love Paul Rudd's casting in this. I really like Paul Rudd. So it was really interesting. The bit with I thought the best bit where he showcases powers is when he's fighting
Yellow Jacket. Yeah,
when he's fighting Falcon, I thought that was like the best bit where I was like, it showed him like how he was using his powers, because even though I read the comics and stuff, when I saw the trailer and it was like, she was like, you know, you can go really small, but you'll be like a bullet. And I was like, yeah, but, you know, when you say it like that, it sounds kind of shit. But when you saw him fighting Falcon and he was going small to become more powerful, I thought that was a better showing off for him. Yeah, I enjoyed it. I kind of thought you could see what was going to happen in the end.
Well, it's like, it's the first film as well. It's like, you know, it's a similar sort of form. It's like, guy starts off, he's like, you know, he's this guy. He gets the power. He learns how to use his power. He finds out reason for using the power for good. He defeats the bad guy. Credits.
The the bit where he's talking about, like, the reactor and you'll shrink between the atoms and you'll just, you know, bad things can happen. That was, I think, you know, it was a bit like, okay, take this and put this in the back of your mind and save it for a bit later, because you're going to need to know that information. Also, the extra credit scenes, like, I was a bit like, did I wait for that? Because I thought the first one was fairly obvious, and the second one I was a bit like, meh.
Well, the second one, you can tell it wasn't actually shot by anyone who made Ant-Man. It was made, like, on set for Civil War, probably. And I think it's that was like the window for Ant-Man to come into Civil War, because it's like, obviously, Falcon. Spoilers. We are basically just spoiling the last bit of the film, but basically it's like it's repeating what Michael Douglas says, like Captain's like, we're gonna need. But also, it just like casually reveals, oh yeah, we found Bucky. Just casually.
Yeah,
you're the guy we couldn't find before. Like, we were talking about in the last film, Avengers Age of Ultron. Yeah, we can't find Bucky. Oh yeah, we found him. And it's like,
it's cool. It's all cool. We got this.
Just casually in a fucking end credit sequence as well. And he's like, I think I know a guy. And because it ends with the fact that old Falcon's looking for him as well. So it kind of like, he's like thinking, right, I think I might need someone who can do that sort of thing. So yeah, it's a nice way to say that he's gonna be like essentially in Avengers. And I suppose in a kind of way, it feels like very confident, the fact that, because there was a lot of doubts about this since Edgar Wright dropped out.
Yeah.
That like this may be like the biggest risk Marvel took, and this out of the films, this could be the one that might just do one film and just not bother doing anything else with. But they kind of like firmly said, no, we're sticking with the, you know, the Marvel thing. This is tied into what's other shit's happening. I mean, the first scene starts off with Hank Pym like kicking off about something with Hayley Atwell and with Peggy Carter and Howard Stark. Yeah. Mm. And some other dude who is a baddie. So that's me, a baddie.
Spoilers.
Well, you know, it's not really a spoiler, because Michael Douglas, by the way, the special effects to make Michael Douglas young again looked really good. I mean, you can tell, obviously, it's been computers as fuck, but, you know, I still look pretty impressive considering. Mm. You know, considering that he punches him in the face, and you can tell he's a bit of a fucking dick. You can tell, like, right, well, you know, he's probably going to turn out to be a bit of a baddie of some descript. So, one of the things I went into watching the film was thinking, because obviously, Edgar Wright left the film for, shall we say, basically because they wanted to change it into something that wasn't quite his vision, so he left the project. But obviously, you know, the script was still written. They just rewrite it, and, you know, just change some parts of it. So I think the things like the Thomas the Tank Engine bit, definitely Edgar Wright all over that.
Yeah.
The bit definitely I thought was Edgar Wright was the bit where they're fighting in the case, and like Yellow Jacket says, "I'm going to destroy you, destroyed by the Cure," and he's fight to like the Cure song, like what I played on a phone. I thought that was fucking brilliant. I did go in wondering what was Edgar Wright, Joe Kosh's influence on what wasn't, and how the film would have been different. And I don't think it would have been that much different. And I think, I could be wrong, but I think the main reason why Edgar Wright left was the decision to put Falcon in it and make it that comes. I think he wanted his own film to a extent. I think that was the only part of the film that felt like, oh shit, this is an Avengers film. They went full on, you know. So I think that's probably why they left. He left as director. I don't know, how did you feel? Like, did you feel the any Edgar Wrightness, Joe Kosh's influence?
I agree with like the Thomas Tank thing, and definitely with the fighting in the briefcase. But I can't say I was looking too much for their influences in it, because I kind of didn't want to go in and be looking for Edgar Wright. Because I was, you know, when he left, I was gutted, because I would have...
Because, to be honest, I don't think it'd be that much different.
No, I don't really myself. But I knew Edgar Wright had been working on this for a really, really, really long time, so it was kind of sad that he didn't get to see it through. But like you said, I don't necessarily think it would be that much different. The dry humour was there. I think that's quite their staple. I mean, don't get me wrong, if someone said, actually, we've got an Edgar Wright cut of Ant-Man, he actually finished it, so when he just came in and redid it, like, I would say, all right then. But I don't think it would be that different. I mean, like I said before, there's nothing wrong with it, but at the same time, I kind of felt like something was missing, but I don't know what it was. It's a solid film in every way, but I just feel like, I don't know. I don't know. I can't really put it into words too well.
I do know what you mean. It's just, you want to say underwhelming, it isn't quite underwhelmed, but there is just a hint of underwhelming. Like, it's like, it does its job. It just wasn't like, oh, it just didn't make you go, oh, wow, that was fucking ace. You went, oh, that was all right. Oh, that was good. You know, it's one of those films that doesn't really do anything. It's nice to see Paul Rudd in a film that's doing not like some sort of wacky comedy or some sort of drama slash comedy. He's actually in a, like a Marvel film. It's nice to see him in it, and he does a good job. It's also nice to see Michael Douglas. I thought he did a really, really good job as essentially like the second lead, you know. What I liked by those subtle little like things, like the opening scene with Scott Lang's in a fight, and it turns out it's actually not a fight, it's like a it's like a rite of passage for leaving.
Oh, I see. I didn't see that
bit. Oh, okay.
He was back in his friend's flat.
Yeah, those little sort of things that kind of make you think, like, that was like, oh, that's, like, it was something that turned out to be something else that was kind of like, built. And there was loads of little things like that, and there was certain little things like the, you know, the typical stereotypical, like, kiss of between, like, the hero and the girl. I liked how that was handled. Because it kind of just doesn't do it the old school, like, oh, God, they're going to kiss now. It was kind of like a caught on the act kind of thing, rather more than anything. It's like, oh right, well, we just, like, you always want to go, hang on, did I just miss something? But afterwards I was like, I kind of like that. It avoided all the cheese and just made it funny. So it's a good solid entry. I would look forward to see what they do with him in the Avengers films and possibly a sequel. So yeah,
definitely. And I think the next Marvel film now is
Civil War, isn't it? That's the next one.
It's Civil War, which, you know,
it's a big one. I mean,
it is. It's a big
one. I mean, it's pretty much Avengers 3.
I was about to say, it's pretty much Avengers 3.
It's missing 4, that's about it.
Yeah, looking forward to that. So we'll see where Marvel takes it next. Now, ladies and gentlemen, we're talking some
dead meat.
I'm not doing my big introduction like last week, because quite frankly I haven't written anything down this week.
Imagine if you will
a dark alleyway, I don't know, some shit like that. Imagine
how you're in heels and you see
go on, you could do it. What's that behind you? You turn around and there's a man. What's that covering his face? Is it a mask? You start to walk faster and faster, and he's got a knife, and then shit happens, and now you're dead meat.
and you try to run, and you fall over because you're wearing heels, and he mentioned
yeah. You're stupid. Have you had sex tonight? That's why you're getting stabbed. It's basically
you've got drugs.
Final Girl Theory comes from Carol J. Clover and her 1987 article, Her Body Himself, which basically says that the girls who survive slasher films do so because they have a certain set of physical and mental characteristics. Now, you're probably going to recognise these because, seriously, they've been used over and over again ever since the early 70s. They are, and I'd like to point out that she doesn't have to possess all of these characteristics, these are just the main ones. A unisex name, a bookish and shy personality, an awareness of the threat before other characters, she is watchful to the point of paranoia. Handiness or some sort of mechanical skill set, boyish, in no way overtly feminine, and most importantly, virginal. So for Clover, the ultimate final girl who really fits this is Laurie Strode from Halloween, played by Jamie Lee Curtis. She writes extensively about Laurie Strode. I'd like to point out as well that Carol Clover's theory does also talk about men, But I'm going to save that for another time and do another podcast on it. Yeah, she talks about Laurie Strode and how Laurie Strode is all these things. You know, her friends go out and have sex and they're partying, and Laurie just stays with the kids and she's doing her homework, and she picks out scenes to show how smart Laurie is. For example, the bit where she's in school and she's looking out the window and she sees Michael Myers, and even though she's not really concentrating on the lesson, when the teacher calls upon her, she can still answer it. So Laurie is, yeah, she's the number one. She talks briefly about boys, but there's no really boys in her life. When Michael comes for Laurie Strode, and when the monster or the slasher comes for all the final girls, their defense must move from passive to active. They're the ones who notice that not only are their friends dying, but there is someone out there coming for them. The final girl will usually try and present this to a figure of authority, but they are always ignored, because it's very important in the final girl theory that the girls are on their own. There is no authority figure to help them. There is no parent to save them. It's like a rite of passage, growing up from a girl to a woman, but the initiation is to survive this killer.
Well, it's kind of like how sorry, interjecting, but it's kind of like just natural story. So like the lead character who would survive, it would be the one who's kind of like, hey, what the fuck's going on? Whether it's a boy or a girl, so it's a natural thing. And plus, it would devalue their story if like they go like, officer, there's a guy killing me. Okay, bang, all right, killer's dead, sorted. Bye, everyone! I think those themes kind of blend in naturally.
It's almost like a Beauty and the Beast kind of fairy tale, if you know what I mean. Because the killer is always virtually indestructible. He is very tall or very overweight or disfigured in some way, or even sometimes, like Jason Voorhees, you know, he's got some sort of mental disability. In other words, he's outside the norm. And it's, once again, it's a theme we see in a lot of horror films. It's this outside attacking normality.
It's either that or gets away with it. I don't know if you see, you probably have, but you've ever seen Black Christmas, the original. Like, that film, kind of like, the creepy thing about the thing is, but the guy in it is the phone calls. And it's like, the sounds he makes, it's just like, oh, that's just fucking, that just does not sound, right. But because the guy they used looks like a fairly normal guy as well. So the idea of, like, you don't really see his face, but, like, from what you can see, he doesn't look disfigured, doesn't look, like, strange. He looks like a very regular-looking guy, but in a black jumper or whatever, you know. And for the idea of him doing all this shit, as well as the phone calls, you know, really twisted kind of stuff, just adds that extra eeriness to it. And the fact that he gets away with it, it's just a little bit, so even if like Michael Myers or Jason Voorhees, that kind of indestructible killer things, like, even if, like, yeah, they got away or they think he's dead, we know he's not, he's still out there somewhere, you know. It's, and that's scarier. It's like, there's no getting away from that, because once you kill the monster, it's like, oh, well, something to be scared of anymore.
Yeah, exactly. Carol Clover says as well that she says that the female must take on male characteristics in order to defeat the monster, so she must become more male. There's a lot of theory, like Barbara Creed and Julie Kristeva, who talk a lot about castration theory and, like, women are jealous of the penis, basically, and men are scared of women because we haven't got a penis and all this kind of shit. And it kind of, in some ways, feeds into that kind of theory that a woman can only defeat a man by becoming more masculine. But if you watch Halloween, Laurie goes after Michael Myers first with a knitting needle, which is a sign of domesticity and femininity. She picks up his knife at one point but can't use it against him. Now, Carol Clover makes this whole point all the way through, and I'm going to start talking about some of the problems I have with Carol Clover's theory and some points that people mentioned. She goes on and on and on and about women have to save themselves because that's how they enter adulthood. However, in Halloween, Laurie Strode is saved by Sam Loomis. She doesn't save herself. And then Carol Clover goes, oh yeah, I know I've said all that basically, but it doesn't matter because she's empowered by her experience. Like, don't make this point all the way through and then find out it doesn't fit what you've said and then double back on it.
Well, at the end of the day, it's like, that's just one person with an opinion. And so just because they have an opinion doesn't necessarily mean it's the definitive like, yeah. Reason, like, there's no such thing. I mean, basically, my opinion on the whole thing, like, sort of, like, desexualization of the women, I think it's basically simple as this. Films back in the days were mainly used to the idea of male leads. And so it's simple as when you have a horror film, which, you know, is probably going to be popular, the filmmakers at the time, also say the producers, would rather that the male be a bit more boyish, i.e. be more like, basically they appeal to the male audiences, you know, they find something they've got in common with them, so if they are a bit more tomboyish, they can identify with them as well as the girls can identify. In a way it kind of unisexes that character, rather than if she was all girly, then that might turn off the guys, essentially go like, oh, I couldn't get into it, she was just too old girl. She's like, girl, what the hell's that? I mean, it's dumb, it's completely dumb, but it probably has some truth to it, especially back in that day. I think that's where it comes from rather than anything else. It's just simply as a way to kind of sell the film, essentially. But
it's just, from my point of view, a lot of... Anytime I read an article about women in horror films, they always reference Clover. They're constantly referencing back to Clover. It's almost like... In my master's degree, I'm writing about women in horror films. I'm writing about women in monster films. So there's four main theorists I come across all the time, and Clover's one of them. Now, obviously, she hasn't rewritten her article since 1987. So, and horror films have... Slasher films have evolved and changed. So the final girl's evolved and changed. So we need to kind of... Part of my thesis is kind of coming up with the new final girl. Who is the new final girl and what does she do and all that kind of jazz? If we want to talk about, briefly, a kind of newer final girl... You only need to look at Scream. Scream actively plays with established conventions of the genre. Sydney has sex with her boyfriend. Her boyfriend's the fucking murderer, and she's not the only person who survives. The only virgin in that is Randy, who says at the end, I'm so glad I'm a virgin. Gail Weathers is the other kind of final girl, but she's like, you know, a selfish, ambition-hungry, manipulative cow. And she still survives. And Sydney is aware of this stereotype. There's a point where she says... She's talking about some stupid killer stuff and some big-breasted girl who can't act, who's always running up the stairs when she should be running out the front door. And what does she do when the killer comes through the front door? Runs up the fucking stairs. So she's aware of...
To be fair, if I think... I remember watching the film, isn't the front door option unavailable, though, or something? Or there's like, an understandable reason why she doesn't...
I think it comes through the window, or it's...
She locks
like
the
that.
Door, but... and it's like... If you think about it, you probably would run somewhere else, because... You wouldn't like be like, oh, hang on, I'll just unbolt this front door while the killer just comes up and stabs me in the butt. You know, it's that kind of like, I mean, like, yeah. But I do always find that funny. It's like, yeah, it, there is a point to that, though.
So she's aware of the conventions of the genre. Mm. She's, I mean, they're all kind well, the, of aware
the whole film is kind of thing. You know, it makes a point of making the rules itself. You know, like
Well, Randy talks about it, doesn't he? There's three rules. Don't have sex, don't say you'll be right back because you won't, and then there's another one.
That's basically you can't have sex, and then don't do drugs, which is an extension of...
And then one of the killers goes, I'll be right back, and obviously he's the killer. One of the articles I read when it was talking about the new final girl was talking about the, you know, sex in the films. The article made, and I'll link the article on the blog post, which will be going up some point this week, just so people can read it and things like that, so people know I'm not ripping off someone. Is that it doesn't necessarily mean that you have to be virginal in these films to survive, but that sex has to be on your terms. Nancy in Nightmare on Elm Street's got a boyfriend. Doesn't necessarily mean that she's a virgin, doesn't necessarily mean that she's not, but her relationship with her boyfriend is a lot more even than her friends. Tina's relationship with Rod is a lot more, he's like the alpha male, so their relationship's more even. And the article says that you know, sex doesn't have to be a bad thing, you know, because there's been instances where the killer, the final girl's been the killer, or the final girl has died halfway through and it's not the actual final girl. It could be that just, you know, be true to yourself, otherwise there will be consequences. So it could be still a cautionary tale about sex, but not so much have sex and die. It could be much more, you know, if you would have sex, that's fine.
But not every horror film has to reference that anyway, because otherwise it would just be like, oh, right, so... Virgin's going to be the ones who's okay. You know, it's a lot more fresher to kind of turn that on its head. I mean, it's a bad film, as I watched it not so long ago, but Cherry Falls plays with that convention. You know, it plays with, like, you know, oh no, this film where the virgins die. I mean, it doesn't, like, it completely sort of drops that theory anyway. But, you know, it loses sight of its convention. It's not that good a film. But, you know, again, that's another example of a film playing with those ideas, you know. So, you know...
Yeah, but, I mean, like I said, the final Gale theory, I mean, hasn't been updated since the 80s. I mean, people will obviously still be writing about it, but...
Yeah.
We do need a new Final Girl, because it's not the same anymore. It's not like, you know, I think parents are less likely to tell their daughters now, if you have sex, bad things will happen to you. I think they are more likely to say, okay, you may want to have sex, but make sure you're protecting yourself. Make sure you're emotionally protected. I think that's much more of a modern message than if you have sex, you're going to get pregnant and die, because that's not necessarily the way of the world now. So yeah, it's an outdated theory. But, it, like I said, it is still the basis of a lot of articles and things that people write. But I would like to see... I don't want to just see people arguing against why Carol Clover's wrong or why they disagree, because I disagree with that to a certain extent. But I would like to see someone update it. What's the new Final Girl doing? How does she survive? You know, and why is it important that she survives? I mean, men survive horror films these days, you know. It's not... They're not always the bad guy. They're not always the killer. They're not always the asshole. You know, things have changed, so let's see a new updated theory for this century, for this time.
I mean, I don't know, I think we're at the moment where everyone just knows that's the norm, so generally they just do whatever they can to change that up or just add a different spin on it. Or, I mean, the film was screaming out to me, it's not really that much different, but You're Next, which is basically, that as like the final girl on that is pretty much, she's a survivalist anyway. So she just knows how to kick ass, and that's what surprises them. They're expecting, like, you know, and it's like, oh shit, she's actually quite tough. And she's, you know, she's resourceful and all this kind of shit, you know. But they all kind of play with, like, that convention anyway. So, like, so it's say if me and you go to make a horror film, like, slasher film, with that kind of, like, final girl convention, we'll have that in our heads, and we'll try and think, oh, what can we do to make that bit different, what can we do to make that interesting, or what can we do to kind of make that, like, add a little bit of a spin on it, or even make a joke of it or something, or anything, you know, because you don't, otherwise, if you just do the basic, like, horror girl conventions, it'll just become like, well, that's a bit boring, isn't it, you know. So I think now it's just it is changing, but now it's just kind of like, I don't think there's a set formula anymore. I think it's just, you know, it's just like, well, we've got the basic setup that, like, is that's been signposted in Scream, you know, back in 96. Even like back then. So now we're just kind of like doing what we can to just play with that. So it's like we've got our basic conventions. Now we're just basically playing and we're seeing what we can get away with, see what we can do differently, you know.
So yeah, that pretty much wraps up Final Girl Theory. Like I said, there is a lot of feminist film theory is linked to, basically it boils down to fear, and it's all down to male fear. So yeah, that wraps up Dead Meat, and that wraps up the podcast this week. So as always, I would like to thank Chris.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
And you can tell people where to
find you. You can follow me on Twitter at Cinematronics, or you can go on my website, which is www.cinematronics.co.uk, where you can actually, I've uploaded new podcast episodes. Believe it or not, I've got one on Terminator Genesis to post, which I should have done ages ago, but by the time this podcast releases, it'll probably be out. And yeah, look out for my Bond podcast. And look out, I should be on iTunes soon, so watch this space.
You can follow us at Black Hole... Oh my god, I forgot. I've just looked at it as well. Oh dear, Emma. Black Hole Cinema Online. Black Hole Online. And we're on Facebook as well. You can follow me on Twitter at ChristianAce2 if you really want, but I'm not that interested. I'm not. And before we go, as always, I have to give some advice to you. If Red Riding Hood shows up with a bazooka and a bad attitude, chin the bitch. Bye!